was a kind introduction, I'm pretty sure, as I think about it. Hey, I gotta tell you, it's good to be here with you. Although yesterday when I was packing, I was starting to question that decision. I started wondering, now, why did I agree to come to Billings in February? It's supposed to be a high of 1 degrees tomorrow, you realize this, right? But then I looked out, I'm like, man, we have this place packed with 400 people. This is pretty amazing. And then it hit me, I was like, well, what else are you going to do in Billings on a Friday night? See, I can pick on you. I grew up in a small town. We didn't even have a stoplight in my town. So Billings was like the big city. Well, I am thrilled to be here. My dad and I have been looking forward to speaking together on a topic. If you haven't figured out, there's a lot of people that are not willing to talk about the subject and topic that we're going to tackle tonight. A lot of people would rather just kind of pretend that this isn't taking place and ignore it. So if you haven't figured out, the topic for tonight and primarily tomorrow is a word that starts with P and ends with orn. And it's not popcorn, as a junior higher shouted out one time when I mentioned that. One of the great things about what I do is I just get to meet interesting people. I was flying on the plane today. The lady next to me was bringing a pie to Richard Nixon's brother. And we had this interesting conversation. I'm like, okay, I get to meet fascinating people. But one of the hard things about what I do, especially speaking on topics like this, is I get to hear a lot of heartbreaking stories. Never forget one, a young man came up to me, lower 20s. He described growing up in a Christian home. He grew up in a Christian school, went to youth group. Married the girl of his dreams, beautiful inside and out. They got married, and about 6 months into their marriage, she discovered his porn addiction. Now, instantly she thought there was something wrong with her and she fell short in some fashion. That had nothing to do with it. Bottom line is he was wrestling with this for years, never told anybody, was convinced it would go away, quote, when he had the real thing, and it didn't. Devastated their marriage. They were actually divorced within a year. Now, of course, God forgives him, and he's moving on and getting his life back together. But the thing I hear so frequently from people is, you know what, I wish I could rewind the clock 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, however many years, have heard a talk like this, taken it to heart, and had the courage to do something different in my life in light of it, that goes against kind of the message we hear portrayed in the culture, that is, do whatever feels good. Don't make any moral judgments of any behavior. My life would have been very different. Well, tonight and tomorrow, we're going to offer a little bit of a different alternative, a biblical view of this issue. You're going to learn very quickly, if you don't know my father or I, that we do not hold back on speaking truth. Now, I see some kids here, and we're not going to say things just to provoke for the sake of provoking. But I have a daughter who's 11, a son who is 6, and a son who's 14. I've started talking with my kids early about these topics. So I'm thrilled to see parents and grandparents who brought their kids. You're doing the right thing. Let's start kind of in an obvious place. What actually is pornography? It almost sounds funny to define it, but we have to. If you actually look at the ancient way it was used in Greek, it comes from the term pornographos, that means writings about prostitutes. So in one sense, if you want to understand how pornography affects a society or a relationship, think about how prostitution affects society and a relationship. Now, more technically speaking, a definition would be an image, sound, or words that is meant to sexually arouse. So pornography is intended to sexually arouse. That's why there's a distinction between art and between pornography. Now, the reality is, under the guise of art, a lot of pornography is pushed and promoted. But in principle, there is a distinction. Okay, so it's an image, a sound, words, a story, meant to sexually arouse is what we mean by pornography. Now, quite clearly, the pornography we see today is very different than pornography in the past. Now, my dad's going to spend more time in this, but let me just point out three quick ways pornography is different today than it has been in the past. One way is it's much more aggressive. pornography is much more aggressive, just one click away, than it has been in the past. Time Magazine had a cover story in 2016. And Peggy Orenstein, one of the authors, she said, producers of porn have one goal, to get men off hard and fast for profit. That means eroticizing the degradation of women. In studying behaviors in popular porn, nearly 90% of 304 random scenes contained physical aggression toward women, who nearly always responded neutrally or with pleasure. The kinds of pornography available today is much more graphic and aggressive than in the past. She said, more insidiously, women would sometimes beg their partners to stop, then acquiesce and begin to enjoy the activity, regardless of how painful or debasing. That's part of the message of porn. Second, it's much more acceptable than it's been in the past. In fact, if you watch the Super Bowl, there was a commercial where there's a guy who has an addiction to food, mimicking as if he was having an addiction to pornography. How many of you saw this commercial? How many of you just didn't watch the Super Bowl because you're tired of the Patriots being in it anyway? I get the point. I watched that, and my instant thought was, we've come to the point in culture where porn is so accepted that we can just laugh at it. We can just laugh at it. Because the cultural idea is, well, we know everybody's doing it. Let's just laugh at it and pretend it's like food. According to a study my father commissioned with Barn Research, 9 out of 10 young men, 13 to 24, say that how they talk about porn with friends is encouraging, accepting, or neutral. 90%. In fact, this next study it blew me away when I first heard it, of Gen Zers. Think about this. What would you say is worse, to not recycle or to look at pornography? Don't answer that, but just think about it. What's worse, not recycling or looking at porn? Well, teens and young adults rank not recycling as more immoral than viewing porn 56% to 32%. Think about how backwards that has become. Third is more available, quite obviously. My father's going to talk more about this, especially because of the internet and because of mobile phones and technology, and smartphones have changed everything about the ubiquity and availability of pornography. They've changed everything. What's interesting, though, is pornography is not just a male issue. According to this study, 13% of practicing females, and practicing it means Christian females, 13 to 24 actively seek out porn at least once or twice a month, 17% non-practicing. Now, you always have to look at a number of studies to try to get the truth. Another study I saw is that about 30% of pornography is viewed by women. So statistically speaking, almost all men look at pornography in America and beyond. So pornographers fighting for the almighty dollar, not giving a rip about you or your relationships or your family, have begun to intentionally target both kids and women for the sake of dollars. Now, what's often hard for girls is sometimes in our culture we'll joke, even in that Super Bowl commercial, it was a guy looking at pornography when the girl walks in, right? It wasn't the reverse script. We think, well, you shouldn't be looking at pornography, still Christians say you shouldn't. And then we kind of think, well, a girl especially shouldn't, so there can be a double level of shame for a girl who wrestles with this. Can I just tell you, pornography is not a gender problem issue. It's a human issue. It's a human issue. It's only when we talk about this honestly and through a grace-filled lens that all of us can get the healing and build the relationships God desires for us to have. So we're going to take a look. In fact, by the way, very quickly, some of the kinds of pornography that men and women look at tends to be different. Men tend to focus on the physical side of sex. Women tend to focus on the romantic or relational side. So these books that came out, how many of you have read this? I'm just kidding, you don't have to read it. The year 50 Shades of Grey came out, E.L. James was the number one money-making author in the world. Imagine that, my dad and I were number two. I'm kidding, we weren't even close. Number one in the world. It's a story, I'll save you the details, but about a billionaire named Christian Grey with a tortured sexual past meets a girl just out of college and who is a virgin who gives herself to him sexually in all sorts of violent manners to heal him. I read a doctor's review who said, yeah, this only works in movies. In real life, I deal with the victims. This is amazing. This book can come out at the same time of the Me Too movement and nobody connects the dots. It's unbelievable. But my father and I were just talking this week, some of the stats coming out of some of the leading porn producing websites are starting to show minimal difference between the kinds of pornography guys and girls look at. That's a very interesting trend to think about. With that said, let's look at three myths. Number one, it doesn't affect me. You know how many times I've heard this from young people? Well, it doesn't affect me. I'm different. I'm different. In fact, 71% of Swedish adolescents believe pornography influenced behavior of their peers. Only 29% believed it influenced their own behavior. In my class, I teach at Biola University full time. And so yes, Dick, something good can come out of California. And I still teach high school part time, three mornings a week at a Christian school, teaching worldview and Bible and theology. And I tell my students, I'm like, look, we can talk about anything you want to talk about if we bring it to Scripture, and we're respectful and we think about it. So we're taught my class, and the topic came up, I don't remember how, to pornography and the internet, and we were just kind of talking about it. And the student in the back looked really bothered by this. Class was done, it was the lunchtime, he came up to me sheepishly, he said, Mr. McDowell, can we talk? I was like, no, come back later, it's my lunch break. No, I didn't say that. I said, sure, step into my office, which was a chair in the middle of my classroom. We sat down, and before, keep in mind, this is a great kid, great family, excellent athlete, wonderful student. Before he could say anything, high school senior, 17, 18 years old, puts his head in his arms like this, he starts to cry. He goes, Mr. McDowell, for, I think he said, months. I go in my room and I turn the light off, and my parents think I'm going to sleep. I turn my computer, my tablet, smartphone, and I just look at porn for hours. He goes, I can't stop. What do I do? I said, well, first off, thank you for sharing with me. This is the first right step. I said, second, we can get through this if you really want to. So know that there's hope. I said, third, let me ask you a question. How does this affect you? He said, besides feeling guilty all the time, he said, I can't look at a woman the same without undressing her in my mind. It doesn't affect me. I don't care if you're 12 or if you're 112. If you look at pornography and think it doesn't affect you, you are only affecting, you're only fooling one person. And you know who it is. Pamela Paul wrote a book called Pornified. She's a journalist. She said, a single 20-something graphic designer told me he finds himself in bars braiding himself over the way he scanned potential dates. I'd be saying, no, her breasts are too small, she's not worth it, then wonder, who have I become? Why am I judging women like this? The answer is he's looking at pornography, shaping the way he's thinking about and respecting and interacting with women. It doesn't affect me. It doesn't affect me. Gary Brooks, a professor at Texas A&M, said the problem with soft core pornography is that it's voyeurism. It teaches men to view women. It's also true for women to view men, etc., as objects rather than to be in relationships with women as human beings. See what he's saying? He's saying pornography teaches. Notice that word. It teaches. Whether you realize it or not, if you're looking at pornography, it is teaching you to see and understand the world in a certain fashion. It's shaping your worldview. And one thing it does is it objectifies people. So rather than people being humans made in the image of God, that we know and we relate to, they become objects that we use. St. Augustine famously said, we're supposed to love people and use money. But the reality is we love money and we use people. Pornography teaches, just like Dr. Brooks says, to use people as objects. By the way, you know what St. Two popes ago, Pope John Paul said, he said, the problem with pornography is not that it shows too much. The problem is that it shows too little. Let me say that again. The problem with pornography is not that it shows too much. The problem is that it shows too little. And you're thinking, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. You know why? Because we are thinking only of sex as a physical act. You think it shows too much. He says, no, God has designed sex to involve emotions and trust and intimacy and a spiritual, relational component. Pornography doesn't show any of that. It strips it down just to the physical and as a result, objectifies people. It doesn't affect me. Here's another way to think of this. I want you to think of something in your mind called a script, okay? Now, you have in your mind a script about how you behave in a football game, right? You know what to do when the ref makes a bad call? You boo him. You're hungry, give $5 to the person next to you, and peanuts, popcorn, a soda, maybe a hot dog will come back your way, right? That script applies in a football game. It doesn't apply in the setting of, say, an elevator. Have you ever noticed there's actually a script of how you're supposed to behave in an elevator? Even though there's no windows, you're not supposed to face any walls but the front. You're really not supposed to say anything. There's spacing issues, right? There's kind of a script, unlike Elf, don't push all the buttons, that one's obvious. There's a script about how you behave, and that script is different than, say, in a library, right? You notice what's interesting is all of us have all these scripts at a football game, in an elevator, at a conference, waiting in line, about how we behave. What's interesting is we develop these kind of subconsciously. People don't normally tell us, right? You just pick them up. Well, with Gen Z now, you know where virtually all of them, generation as a whole, is getting their script? It's pornography. It's pornography. It's where they're learning to think about their body, compare it to other people, treat others. So have you ever thought about what actually is the script of porn? Well, I'm going to skip through that. Here's the script of porn. One is that sex is experienced best outside of a loving relationship. Look, pornography is not about married couples with kids. That should come as no surprise, right? Because remember, pornography's writing's about... Okay, this is the participatory part of the program. It's writing's about what?
Prostitutes.
Prostitution, by definition, is not in the context of any kind of prolonged or continued relationship. The nature of pornography sells the idea that the most thrilling, exciting, best sex is outside of a committed, loving relationship. This is the script of porn. I remember this was a few years ago now. There was a Carl's Jr. commercial. And some of you know where this is going, right? And it's a commercial, you can Google it and read about it. It had the late Hugh Hefner, founder of Playboy. And it showed him in his infamous red, like, bathrobe that he would wear. And it shows him eating a chicken burger, and then eating a regular burger. And then you see a blonde redhead, and then you see brunette. And he goes, you know, some guys like something different every night. What's the message? You don't want to eat chicken every night. Get variety, right? Get teriyaki, get barbecue. It'd be boring to eat the same thing. Similarly, the message about sex is, with one person in a committed relationship is boring, variety is the spice of life. Friends, this is the script of pornography. This is the message it teaches people, whether you realize it or not. The reality is, now this is a whole separate talk, is ironically, that's false. Empirically false. I wrote a book called Ethics, and I have a whole chapter on sexuality, and I document. And it's time, there's been studies since, a study from the University of Chicago and University of California, Los Angeles, examining like sexual behavior and satisfaction. You know what they concluded? Essentially, people who follow religious ideas of being married to one person of the opposite sex, interestingly enough, and staying faithful to that person for life, these people are having the most quantity and best quality sex on the face of the planet. Amen. There's at least one Baptist here. Now, I think we have to be careful as Christians. One mistake we've made is we've told people, man, come to the Christian faith and have the best sex, as if Christianity is a formula to have the best sex. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is God has designed sex to be between one man and one woman who become one flesh for a lifetime. So if God's a designer and we follow the designer's plan, we're most likely to experience the blessing that God gives us as described in Genesis 1. Pornography mocks the institution of marriage. Hebrews 13:4 says to keep the marriage bed pure. The other shift of pornography is that all women want sex from men. Again, women are basically reduced to sex objects who want sex with men. How degrading can that be? Talk about a war on women, and yet nobody's talking about it. Nobody has the courage to talk about it. Dad, we haven't even talked about this yet. I spent the last 2 days reading all of the California health standards, and it's harrowing what they are now teaching kids from kindergarten all the way up, very intentionally, in contradiction to a Christian worldview. You know what is not mentioned once in the entire, I don't know how many hundreds of pages it is. They don't mention porn once in the entire study. Not once. And yet they're concerned about consent. Where are they getting this idea that consent is okay? It's in porn. All women want sex from men. Third, women like all sexual acts, men perform it to man. If a man wants it, a girl wants to give it. And ironically, you just look at the nature of pornography, and it tells us pretty clearly that men and women are not the same, by the way. Which is a separate issue. Third, if a woman says no, anyone who's not first realized this can be persuaded with a little force. If she says no, she's just plain hard to get. You see the irony with this message and the Me Too movement we find ourselves in, and very few people have the courage to speak up and say, where are men getting the idea that they can abuse and take advantage of and treat women a certain way? Duh, the answer's porn, and nobody says it. Nobody says it. It doesn't affect me. Look, here's a study. You can take a picture of this. You can look it up if you want to. Here's the reality. This was a study from 2012. And what the authors did is they didn't do new research, but they gathered all the different peer-reviewed research they could find about how pornography affects adolescents. Does that make sense? So it wasn't new research. They're trying to gather all the hundreds or whatever, dozens of articles, bring it together and say, what does the peer-reviewed scientific research show about how pornography affects me? Or affects everybody, including you and including me. If you look at it, it affects everybody. That's the idea. Here's what they said. They said, number one, you're more likely to be distracted by thoughts of sex, have more permissive sexual attitude, believe men should be more dominant than women, accept the notion of casual sex, engage in sexual risky behavior, engage in sexual harassment, be sexually aggressive, have insecurities about their sexual abilities, express insecurities about their body image, have clinical symptoms of depression. It doesn't affect me? Friends, the evidence is clear. If you think you can look important and say it doesn't affect you, you're only fooling yourself. The second myth is I'll quit later. I'll quit later. How many times I've met young people who say, when I get older, I'll quit. Or parents who think, it's just a phase my kids are going through. They'll quit when they get older. I think one of the best ways to look at this is actually to look at brain research and how our decisions and habits physically structure the nature of the brain. Dr. Joe McElhaney, in his book Hooked, said the human brain is without question the most complicated 3-pound mass in the universe. You realize there's more synapses and connections in your brain than all the internet connections in the world. Your brain is the most sophisticated system in the universe. And I'm not talking about this brain, just for the record. The scientists used to think that the brain kind of became fixed around adolescent times and kind of was like cement and stayed the same through life. Now we actually know it's not really until your upper 20s. Some are now arguing in your lower 30s that your brain is fully formed. Why does this matter? Because the beliefs that you hold, the decisions you make, the actions that you do, physically change the structure of your brain. In fact, the younger somebody is, the deeper influence it has on the structure of your brain. But we now know throughout life that the brain kind of stays moldable and adaptable. It's never just permanently fixed. Now, when you look at the brain, and my dad's going to talk about this in a little bit more detail, there's a number of different parts of the brain. Neurons are the main cells in the brain. Support cells help the neurons, they get rid of waste. Then you have something called synapses we're going to focus on for just a minute. Synapses are actually key ways that communication takes place in the brain. So here's a phrase, I want you to write this down, all right? Or if you're a Gen Zer, just take a picture of it. I did this whole lesson on the whiteboard, I turn around like, you guys taking notes? And they're like, nope, took a picture and sent it down. I was like, yep, welcome to the new generation. Neurons that fire together wire together. Neurons that fire together wire together. Meaning is you hold certain beliefs and you act, you create certain neuronal pathways that become habits that are fused in your brain. So give you an example, my brother-in-law took this picture when we were on, years ago, kind of actually on a safari in Tanzania. And he took a picture and I learned something about monkeys, that if you take monkeys and you sew their fingers together, I know what you're thinking, what kind of sick person sew their fingers to a monkey? I would never do it to a monkey. I'd do it to a cat, but I would never do it to a monkey. I am totally kidding. Shameless joke, all right? Don't do it to any animals. Now, actually, what some scientists have done is they'll take and they'll tie the fingers of monkeys together for a while. Now, you're thinking, this is still kind of weird. Why? Because the structure of a monkey's brain morphologically is very similar to a human brain. We actually have individual digits we can control and move because of certain neuronal pathways that go to our brains. So you have separate pathways, say, for these two fingers. What happens if they sew these two fingers together? When they go to move one or the other, what happens? They move them together. So they leave it there for a period of time, untie it, those two pathways fuse into one, they go to move either finger, what happens? They stay together until they retrain the brain to create different pathways. So it's kind of like if you're walking through a forest and you see a pathway like this, you probably wouldn't think twice about going somewhere else. You just naturally go down this pathway. Now, at the beginning, when somebody first walked there, it was beaten down a little bit. Over time, it's built into the ground, and people naturally walk through that as if it's a habit. This is what happens in our brains with choices and decisions that we make. This is how Steph Curry can shoot so well. He's built this into the structure of his brain. Another example that might help. I only think of something called a love apple. All right, so in the Middle Ages, lovers would be separated from their lovees, right? You might call them beloveds. And they couldn't text each other, obviously. They couldn't get on Facebook, check a status. You know, they couldn't go the extra mile and, like, pick up the phone and talk because they didn't have a phone. It was like you might go weeks or months without hearing from your loved one. So somebody got an idea that they took an apple and they cut it up into slices. And the woman would take an apple, stick it in her armpit for hours and hours to soak up her scent. So when her lover was gone, he missed her, he could take it out, smell it, and it was as if she was there with him. I noticed all of you stopped taking notes except that guy. No, I'm kidding. Your response just says it all, right? You're thinking that's nasty. Why? Because in American culture, we resist body odor. We shower in the morning, put on deodorant, and then a little swag spray or perfume before we go out. We not only try to hide it, we want to have a different smell. Well, this isn't true for every country in the world. Don't believe me? Just go to France. It's actually not true for the history of most places throughout the world. People don't have, like, running water. They didn't have the technology of soap, the money to afford perfume. So people growing up in other cultures, from the moment they come into the world, their brains are constantly interacting and being formed by human body odor. And they not only find it not repulsive, but can find it a pleasurable experience. So all things being equal, if we imported you back to the Middle Ages and I shared this, you'd be like, why didn't I think of that? That's a great idea. And the only difference is the physical structure of the brain. Do you see how powerful our experiences are? And how foolish it is for somebody to just say, I'll quit later? Because our habits are built into the physical structures of our brains with neuronal pathways. That's why if somebody looks at pornography, your brain can become trained to sexually cue a computer or a tablet or a smartphone, an image. Now, why is this so damaging? Because what's absent? A relationship, appropriate touch, trust, intimacy. The entire context in which God designed sex to be experienced in a beautiful fashion is gone. And somebody trains their brain to respond to an image, by the way, which is almost always airbrushed that none of us in the real world can match up to. So when this person turns around and wants to be with somebody in the way God designed, they haven't destroyed, but they have damaged the body mechanism inside of them. It doesn't affect me. I'll quit later. See how foolish it is to just believe some of these myths propagated in the world. Pamela Paul says, boys who look at pornography, and again, this is not just true for boys. Young people who are, or old people who look at pornography excessively become men who connect arousal purely with the physical, losing the ability to become attracted by the particular features of a given partner. Instead, they recreate images from pornography in their brain while they're with a real person. You realize how your choices are physically shaping the structure of your brains? I have a friend who's not a believer. We've talked about God many times. And he told me that he wasn't interested in God. He goes, why would I be? I'm on the phone with girls all the time, texting them, sleeping around. Someday he wants to get married. And I asked him one day, I said, how are you going to magically stop sleeping around and just be committed with somebody for life? Like, you think you just flip on a switch? It doesn't work that way. In more than somebody who looks at pornography builds these pathways in the brain, so I'll quit later. Friends, that goes against everything that our bodies and our brains tell us about how habits are formed. Now, there's another part of the brain that'll help us with this question, I'll quit later, called neurochemicals. And neurochemicals will send a lot of messages throughout different parts of the body. One neurochemical you will recognize is called dopamine. Now, dopamine is a reward chemical that naturally makes us feel good when we take risks. And again, my dad's going to talk about this more. Essentially, God has designed the body that when you take a risk, like say you go on a roller coaster, what happens? You're waiting, there's kind of anticipation, and then when you're done, it's like, that felt good. Why? That's dopamine and other chemicals being released in your body, giving you a natural high. When somebody works out, what happens when you exercise? You're tired, but you get this natural high, which helps encourage you to work out, which is good, or nobody would exercise, right? This is the way God has designed the body. Do you know what certain drugs do, certain powerful drugs like speed, is they skip the natural process, trigger the neurochemicals that cause the release and absorption of these chemicals in the body, and you get an instant high. That's why drugs are so powerful. They obviously feel good and create a desire for that high again. By the way, you know what's interesting? Some of the same drugs are released in video games as well. I'm not saying they're good or bad, I'm saying be aware of how they're used, and also in pornography. It's in pornography. Chemicals are released to give you a high, to make it feel good, instantly. Now, what's fascinating is I was just interviewed by the Billings Gazette, and actually ran a really positive, I don't know if any of you saw it, they had a really positive story about this event, which was refreshing. Because that doesn't happen in California, maybe it's a Billings thing, I don't know. But the lady was very gracious, gave a positive review. And one of the things I talked about is just the chemicals in there and how deeply they shape our bodies and become addictive. And she commented on that. We have to realize that these chemicals profoundly shape us and last many times for a lifetime. So I said to her, as I said, you know, it's interesting, if somebody has a drug and wants the same high, what do they have to do? More quantity, right? Or a harder drug. With pornography, the same chemicals are involved. It's not more quantity. You know what it is? It's variety. So people look at pornography, they look at nudity, they look at sex, oral sex, anal sex, group sex, and to get that high, keep going down this road and this train, and so many people end up in areas they never would have imagined, including looking at things like child pornography, and many times acting it out. See how foolish it is to say, I'll quit later, it doesn't affect me. Another chemical that's important to know is called oxytocin. Now, oxytocin is known as the bonding hormone that triggers feelings of trust. So according to Dr. McElhaney, when this chemical is released in your body, it actually creates a feeling and a sense of trust with people. So it's really interesting. They've done some scientific studies where people don't know that they're given oxytocin and they're playing these high-stakes financial games. And people who have been given oxytocin are more likely to trust people with their money than those who are not. It's a tangible biochemical way that God has built inside of us. Now, why is this important? Because the Bible talks about the reasons God made sex. Genesis 1, 27 and 28, make babies, populate, fill the earth. So one purpose of sex is procreation. I assume you knew that. If not, maybe now would be the time to sneak out. But the second purpose is in Genesis chapter 2. It says, a man shall leave his father and mother, cling to his wife, so it's talking about marriage, and the two shall become one. There's a bonding in marriage. I used to read that and think, oh, it's a spiritual unity. When I started to read about chemicals like neurochemicals like oxytocin, I realized, no, it's more than that. The two shall become one. It's a biochemical unity and bonding as well. You ready? Watch this. Boom. You see that? We spare no expense here, Dick. Ready? One more time. Boom. Now, what's interesting is oxytocin it's in men and women, but seems to be particularly strong in women and is released three times. Number one, when a woman gives birth, which is very painful. So they tell me. I try to be funny when my wife is giving birth, and I learned very quickly, I'm not funny, shut up, and just try to help. Second time it's released is when a woman is nursing. So my youngest is six, but when she was nursing, I asked her, I'm like, do you feel this just bonding and connection when you're nursing? She's like, yes, my body is connecting with him. And I think any woman who's had kids and nursed can feel that connection. The third time is in sexual activity. But it's not just physical. Oxytocin can be released when you just gaze lovingly into somebody's eyes. Isn't that amazing? In fact, I've heard of therapy that marriage counselors would do that'll say, just look at each other and tell yourself you love this person. Look at them lovingly. Try to start even shaping and changing your body to have feelings of love. Why is this powerful? Because God has put this bonding mechanism in men, and particularly in women. But when you look at pornography, when you're sexually active, it damages the bonding mechanism that God has put inside of you. I'll quit later. It doesn't affect me. Now, in men, there is a chemical equivalent. It's not testosterone. It's called vasopressin, and some have dubbed it the monogamy molecule. In other words, this is a molecule that we're told actually creates a sense of bonding between a man and his kids and his spouse. Some of you are like, where can I buy this? I need those men who need this. Well, what's interesting about this chemical is they've actually done some experiments with animals. And there's this animal called a prairie vole. And what's unique about a prairie vole is they're one of the few animals where a male vole and a female vole partner up, make baby voles, and the man stays faithful. Not the man, the male vole stays faithful. You meant what I knew. The male vole stays faithful to the female vole for life. It's like over 90%. These are monogamous animals. So what scientists found is a high amount of vasopressin inside these prairie voles. You see the power of the chemicals. Well, some scientists got an idea and some funding, which probably came from you and me, to see what would happen if they blocked the release of vasopressin inside these prairie voles. Would it change their behavior? You know what they found? These little prairie voles that partner up with their opposite sex spouse and have baby voles and stay faithful to them for life. You block vasopressin, and these little hamsters start sleeping around. That's messed up, isn't it? Now, there's animals. We can't blame them. They act on instinct. But I think this shows the power of these chemicals that God has put inside of us. So somebody says it doesn't affect me, I say, have you thought about how it shapes the structure of your brain, cause you to objectify women or men, etc.? Somebody says, I'll quit later. I say, do you realize how you physically shaped your brain and pathways to have certain habits? And you're just going to quit. Think about it this way. I won't do this live, but if you take duct tape and put it on someone's arm and you rip it off, it hurts, right? What happens if you use the same duct tape and put it on the other arm? What does it lose? Stickiness. And then you keep using it each time it loses its stickiness. This is what sexual activity outside of a committed, loving marriage and looking at pornography does. Is it damages the bonding stickiness that God has put inside of us to connect with a spouse for life if you choose to get married. And the third one we'll look at briefly is this. I'm not hurting anyone. You ever heard that? You know what pretty much the new sexual ethic is? As long as someone gives consent, it's okay. Our sexual ethic in America has been reduced to giving consent. It's fine, as long as you don't hurt anybody. But here's one thing I know about sin. Somebody always gets hurt. God, other people, yourself. In fact, some of the conversations I've had with women or with men whose spouses looked at porn for years is when they finally discover, you know what they say? They go, now it makes sense. The lack of intimacy, the lack of trust. So they had been suffering for years, even though they didn't know the source of it. There's an article online. I challenge you to read it, or encourage you to read it. A girl wrote it, and I don't generally encourage people to read anonymous things online, but this article was pretty powerful. A young woman wrote a letter. She said, anonymous letter to porn-watching dad. And she was writing it basically to say, guys, if you're a dad or you're a male out there and you think this doesn't affect you, let me tell you my story about how it affected me. She was 12, came across pornography on her father's computer, accidentally. Most kids who come across pornography aren't looking for it, by the way. But pornographers are looking for your kids and your grandkids. Came across it accidentally, saw these images, she said, I started to realize that mom wasn't the only one my dad was looking at. Then I started to think, gosh, these lectures or talks my dad would give about how beauty is on the outside meant nothing. Because he didn't really believe it. I realized I'd never really be beautiful in his eyes unless I looked like these images of the women on his screen. She said, I started to wonder, like even when my friends in high school came over, did my dad look at them as sex objects in his fantasies? Like that's a chilling, disturbing thought, but it does affect people that way. She said, finally as I got older, and I fell in love with a man, I asked him, did he look and wrestle with pornography? She said, fortunately, no. But even in our marriage now, we have a healthy marriage. I'm still having a lack of trust for men. And it still affects my self-image. Friends, if you don't think pornography hurts anyone, you are only fooling yourself. By the way, pornography is not wrong because it hurts people. It hurts people because it's wrong. Pornography is not wrong because it hurts people. It hurts people because it's wrong. And there's an article I posted on my Twitter feed last Sunday. You know what it was? It was a woman talking about how as a young girl she was brought into sexual slavery. It was in USA Today. And described exactly how she was drawn into this. Why did she write it? Because last Sunday was the not-so-Super Bowl. And she talked about how when the Super Bowl or something comes to town, there's an increase in sexual slavery and activity because men want to be like, act like men. The reality is, you can tie the availability of pornography to increased demand for sexual slavery, including young kids. Just think about this. Every time you click on a pornography page, you are voting with your eyes, with your time, and with your values that you want more of this produced. You're supporting it. In reality, you're supporting it. No, my goal tonight is not to make you feel guilty. We're not here from Southern California and wondering whether to go beat up on folks about pornography. That is not our goal. One thing I've learned is this is an issue people kind of want to push under the rug. They don't really want to talk about it. And sometimes it takes a little shaking to say this is devastating your relationships, devastating your self-image. Have you thought about this with your kids? It's all hands on deck. So I'm just going to give you three quick things to think about. My father's going to get into this in more detail tomorrow, but to just give you some hooks, so to speak, to process this. The first one Dick already mentioned is get filter on your devices. We got filter on our devices. I have, same with my wife. She gets an alert every week, and I'm just like, I forget about it. I don't even remember, which is probably a good thing. Like twice, she's been like, hey, I got this alert about that. I'm like, oh yeah, doing some research. And we talk about it. And it's not because she doesn't trust me. That has nothing to do with it. That has nothing to do with it. I figure if I'm going to tell folks they should do this, I should do it myself. And I also want to go out of my way to tell my wife, look, I'm building this in and modeling this. So just think about it. Covenant Eyes is fantastic. I won't go into detail, but I would highly recommend it. Second, the key is this. Experience God's grace through confession and accountability. If you're watching this going, man, I had no idea it affected my brain, this is terrible, I'm going to stop this. You might stop it for a day or 2 days or maybe a month. But unless you get to the root of the issue, you'll never experience healing. This is true for looking at a little bit of porn or being addicted for years. At root, it's a spiritual, relational brokenness. It's only when we restore that relationship with God and have healthy relationships with other people that we realize aren't based on our efforts and our accomplishments. But like the father of the prodigal son, God loves us. See, what happens sometimes when I go to Christian conferences, I hear young people say, my parents didn't talk to me about sex. Sex was bad. So they see things, they act a certain way, they get shame, and they bury it inside, and then they feel worse because they feel like, if I tell anybody, this is going to ruin everything. So they promise not to do it, and then they fail, and then the shame gets worse, and it becomes a cycle. Either a kid will walk away from their faith, question the scriptures, it affects their worldview, or they'll just live a defeated Christian life. It was Paul who said, what did he say? My strength is in my weakness. Strength is in my weakness. This is what makes Christianity different. It's grace. It's grace. I think it's only when we know God's forgiveness that begins to seep into all level of our bones and experience that healing that we can really be transformed out of this. Pornography, in a sense, is a symptom, isn't it? It's the fruit on the tree. Gambling can be that. Being a workaholic can be that. Alcohol can be that. At the heart, one thing I've learned that is an addiction is something that is used to fill a void that a relationship is meant to fill. An addiction is something that is used to fill a void a relationship is meant to fill. So if you're sitting there thinking, if I share this with somebody, man, my life is over. I can't, you know, people are going to be ashamed of me. Just get rid of that lie because it's a lie from Satan. Satan is the accuser. Jesus said, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. It's the truth of forgiveness that brings freedom. That's the gospel story. We don't have to live the way our culture wants us to live. There's freedom in confession. There's freedom in experiencing God's grace. And we're going to talk about that more tomorrow. And the last one I'll end with this is my talk is actually at my website, seanmcdowell.org. Why am I mentioning this? One thing to think about this weekend is to ask yourself, how can I, in our social media world, just be a voice against the trash and nonsense that's out there? Part of my philosophy on Twitter is there's so much trash and garbage, I just want to contribute good articles, good thoughts, and encourage people. Could it be going on Facebook and posting a short video or a longer one, my dad, with me, or somebody else who talks about this? How can you take what you've learned, write a blog, do a Facebook post, take the stuff this weekend and just be a voice in your city, in your school, in your church, and you can make a difference. Amen. There's a book back there I wrote called Ethics, if it's helpful. It's a book for students called Being Bold in a Whatever World. It's about making right choices. Pornography is one piece of it, but it's a broader book. We talk about abortion, God's will, homosexuality, all these tough topics. But if you're a student and you want to think through how do I make right choices, that's a resource in the back that might help you. I'm looking forward to being back in the tomorrow morning, but even more so, hearing my dad coming up soon. Take it away.